Welcome to the I Have ADHD podcast, where it's all about education, encouragement, and coaching for adults with ADHD. I'm your host, Kristen Carter, and I have ADHD. Let's chat about the frustrations, humor, and challenges of adulting, relationships, working, and achieving with this neurodevelopmental disorder. I'll help you understand your unique brain, unlock your potential, and move from point A to point B. Hey, what's up? This is Kristen Carter, and you're listening to the I Have ADHD podcast. I am medicated, I am caffeinated, and I am ready to roll. It is good to be with you, my fellow ADHDer. How are you? Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here with me. I think you're probably going to notice that we've had like a month or two of interviews. And I just want you to understand that the last couple months of summer, I have not been able to have the capacity and the stamina to write a solo show. And so instead of just ditching the podcast altogether, I decided to start doing interviews because conversations are so much more doable for Kristen Carter than coming up with an idea for an episode, writing it all out, recording it. I mean, that takes like 6 hours usually of my time to record a solo show. And recording an interview takes about an hour and a half of my time. So I chose the easier road. For the last couple of weeks, we've had a bunch of interviews, and that has been the easier road. But also, sometimes the easier road is the road to travel. Do you know what I am saying? It's like either I'm going to stay in bed and not travel any road, or I will travel the easier road. Sometimes we need to let ourselves off the hook and not make ourselves do the very, very hard thing because we end up just not doing it. And that's where I felt like I was headed, where I was like, I'm either not going to record an episode at all, or I'm going to do interviews. And of course, I chose interviews. I actually love interviewing people. This is like a really fun part of my job. Solo shows, I think, are really valuable. And I know y'all love them. But also, my goodness, they take a lot of work, which I'm happy to do once my kids are back in school, which by the time you're listening to this, hallelujah, they will be back in school. Let the heavens open up. Let just the sunshine and the angels sing and like all of the applause, because the children will be back to school. You know, parents of school age kids, unite. It is not easy. And the summer starts off so fun and like so exciting. And truly, we had a great time, but also they needed to go back. They needed to go back to school. They needed to go back. So as an ADHD mom, that is a mom who has ADHD, who is parenting two neurodivergent children, one with ADHD, one with OCD and ADHD, it's been a lot. It's been a whole lot. So I am holding you in solidarity. If you are also in this experience of like, could they just please go back to school? 3 months ago, if you had asked me, like, are you going to feel that way? I would probably say, no, I'm so glad summer's starting. It's so great to just be able to like be chill and have the kids home. And they're so great. And guess what? They are great. But staying home all day playing video games and asking 7,000 questions, it's not what I consider to be a good. It's not a good life for Kristen Carter. So, okay, I'm going to move on. I think the point in me wanting to say all of this is like, if you've noticed there's been a lot of interviews lately, this is why, because I want to bring you the value of this podcast. And the only way that I was going to do that is if I could make it through interviews. Okay, y'all, that's just the only way. So we're going to get back to solo shows soon. But please know, like, interviews are my favorite as well, because the best part about this is that you get to hear from other people with ADHD who have walked the walk. You get to hear other people's journey and identify and really feel like you're not alone. And I think that is a very important part of the community that we've created here through this podcast, is knowing that you're not alone, knowing that you're not the only one, knowing that you're not broken, knowing that there are other people out there like you who have experienced similar things happening. And I'm so looking forward to you hearing from my client, Ellen, today, because Ellen is, first of all, she's an amazing human being, but she's farther down the road than some of us here. So Ellen is a 74-year-old woman with ADHD. She was diagnosed in the year 2000, but only in the last couple of years has she really taken ownership of her ADHD. And I really think that you are going to resonate with her story and feel so encouraged by the person that she is. When we were done recording, I asked her if she was taking applications for more children, like adoptive children. She says she's not, unfortunately. So if that's something that you are looking for from Ellen, unfortunately, she doesn't have the capacity for that. But I was like, are you taking applications for adoptive children? Because you are amazing. Let me tell you a little bit about her, because I think you're really going to be interested in hearing from her. She wrote in a bio, I'm going to read what she wrote. It's awesome. Ellen says, it's good to be 74 years old. I'm Ellen, and 2 years ago, I discovered this wonderful podcast called I Have ADHD. Everything Kristen said resonated with my heart, and it was time to dive in and educate myself. I realized that my ADHD was always present, but I masked my insecurities with a confident attitude and hard work. Hello, anyone else? Here's her life in a nutshell. She's one of 11 children. She was a stay-at-home mom, a sales representative, was remarried at the age of 33, and relocated to California from the Midwest. She raised 5 children, 2 daughters and 3 stepsons. She was an entrepreneur for 18 years. She's a grandmother to 15. At 65, she retired because of her husband's failing health. She moved back to the Midwest near family, and then her husband passed away and she was widowed. She's now 74 years old. And here's what she says. Experience is the best teacher, and the focus program has been one of the best things I've ever done for myself. It's time to concentrate on me. Let's go ahead and concentrate on this conversation that I have with my client, Ellen. I think you're going to love it. Ellen, welcome to the podcast. I am so glad that you're here. I so appreciate the fact that you're willing to share your journey with us, because to have someone in their 70s be willing to just kind of raise their hand and say, hey, I'd like to share my journey, is so, so important. And I would just love to just begin by saying, welcome. And would you share a little bit about your journey with me?
Well, it's my pleasure. But I have to say, when you said somebody in their 70s, I'm wondering who you're talking about.
Wait, who is she talking about?
I don't think of me. Myself is in my mid-70s, but I am. I mean, yeah. It blows your mind, but life travels fast, I tell you. Mm. You know, I've kind of just been a little, probably like a little whirling dervish, I think, my whole life, you know. And nobody knew what to do back in the 50s and the 60s with a kid that was, you know, irascible or, you know, disagreeable. Mm. And so, you know, I just was kind of disciplined, you know, just disciplined a lot, disciplined a whole lot. Oh. And then went to school, and I went to Catholic school. So in those days, we literally had nuns, and the classic story of the nuns wrapping your fingers with a ruler was real. And guess who got that quite a bit? I was always silly and funny. And so I got away with a lot.
Charming. Were you charming?
I tried to be charming. Yes.
Yeah. I can tell. Yeah.
And I also, because I grew up in a really large family, I grew up very confident and kind of arrogant, because that's the only way you can survive in a large family. And I was number 8 out of 11. And, you know, by the time my mom got down to us, she had her mothering style down to a, you know, the finest degree, and everything ran like clockwork. I mean, I actually had my best friend is my sister, who's 13 years older than me. And I asked her once, I said, I don't remember messes around the house, because I'm very messy now. I mean, messy on the surfaces. I love surfaces. Yeah. And she said, oh no, you guys, I said, do we have toys? Did we, you know, and she said, well, you spent half your life outside, which is true, right? In the old days. But she said, you all had toys, but you played in your room with them. We had really large rooms because it was a really large house. But I do remember my mother making a comment that she thought all tabletops should be in the shape of pyramids so that nobody could lay their stuff on it. So I guess we were well-trained.
Wow.
But, you know, I went through school. They didn't send me to kindergarten for some reason. Everybody else went, but not me. I don't know why. My birthday's August 5, and I still would have made the cut for a public school kindergarten, but I didn't go.
Okay.
So I kind of got off to a really bad start, and I had learning disabilities eventually, of course, that popped out.
Mm.
But anyway, then, okay, you go through life, and you just feel... I worked really hard. I was a hard worker. I had my first job at age 12, running errands for the lady that owned the flower shop in the little village in which we lived. And, you know, I was really responsible and kind of older than my age, I imagine. But then I started struggling with school. And like I said, learning disabilities popped out and difficulty with reading and arithmetic.
Yeah.
And such. So that gave, you know, your confidence level with all that's pretty crappy. And then you get on to high school, and I went to a girls' school, Catholic girls' school. So there we are again.
Oh.
So, and all, everybody was being prepared for college and that or business, it seemed like, but I got lost between the cracks because I seemed like I'm smart because I was confident and bold. But I did terrible with my grades. So
yeah.
I came out of there totally unprepared for life. I didn't go to college because I wasn't encouraged to. Nobody mentioned it to me.
Wow.
Not parents, not school authorities.
Mm-hmm.
I had all my friends went to college, but for some reason I thought I was really, you know, anyway, as it turned out, okay, so you start working and then I started getting fired from jobs. You know, so, and, you know, I think I was just a little too much, you know, kind of, I mean, I don't mean to brag. I just think my personality was like a little, just too much.
I love how that's a brag. You're like, listen, you know, I don't mean to brag, but I'm a lot.
I was too much. and, you know, and if I didn't have a competent employer or competent staff that I'm working with, there I go, you know, so I go through life. Making mistakes, married way too young, you know, probably just to get out of the house and, you know, be loved and all that. And and then I had my babies really young. And
how many kids do you have?
Well, I gave birth to two girls and one set of twin boys, but they didn't live too long. So they lived just 2 days and 9 days. And that's another factor that I didn't deal with, because in those days, in the early 70s, you just like, oh, you're not pregnant anymore. But nobody would talk about it.
Wow.
It wasn't discussed. I didn't really grieve. I thought I was grieving, but it wasn't.
Wow.
And my ex-husband never grieved. So
did that exacerbate your ADHD symptoms? Looking back, do you notice a correlation between that and your ADHD symptoms getting worse? Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Oh, sure. No. It just taught me to mask more.
Yeah.
It taught me to pretend like everything's, you know, like I'm little Mary Sunshine. And
yeah.
And so if I made a mistake or if I was late, or which I was all the time, well, I think the masking's the biggest thing. I just wanted to cover up that I was a mature person and I didn't need to carry on and wail and get sad and all that. And since I wanted a baby, I turned right around and had another one. And you know, my daughter, who just turned 49. And I suffered horrible postpartum depression, but we didn't know that that's what that was then.
Yeah.
In those days, I mean, my gosh, I stayed in the hospital 7 days. And I remember that nurse coming down and saying, now, the doctor's coming down the hall, and if you want to go home, you better put a smile on your face. So I did, and I went home, and I was just fortunately, I had support. My mom came for 2 weeks. She had to, because she had to bring the baby to me to feed me because I didn't do anything. Wow. And then my sister-in-law came for, anyway, it went on and on and on, that aftermath of, and not knowing how to emotionally regulate, how to learn what to do.
Yeah.
I didn't have a support system then, except physically my family, but not an emotional one like you have. And most people today know to go get, at least.
Yes. I just want to highlight, you know, you said masking was one of the ways that your ADHD symptoms like really heightened. And like that wasn't just you, that was society telling you to mask. Like the nurse saying to you, put a smile on your face if you want to get out of here. Like, we want you out, put a smile on your face. And so you're just like, okay, I'll just pretend to be fine. Oh, yeah. It's like, it's so fascinating. And I know that still happens today, but my goodness, 50 years ago, almost, it was so much more prevalent at that time.
There was no other way. I'll be quite honest. I'd never heard of anybody. I happened to be down by the Gulf Shore. My really large family was at that time, got together every 4 years for 1 week at some shore. So anyway, and I went into labor and went to this very small hospital. And the first thing that emergency room doctor said to me was, what are you doing here?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And he said, don't you know that when you're pregnant with twins, it's a high risk pregnancy? Now, I was 24. So no, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing everything safely, but, you know, like taking care of myself while I was there, but, and I flew there. I mean, you know, I did everything right, but so yes, I had to conform to what I thought society wanted from me that whole entire life. Mm-hmm. And finally in my early fifties, I've had a kind of a privileged life and I was with a nutritional counselor and in therapy. And she said, you know, let's go get this ADHD thing examined. And so she sent me to the Amen Clinic down there in Newport Beach, and they did all the intake stuff. And then when it came time to go see the psychiatrist, who was the director of the clinic, and I came in, sat down and chatted with him. I mean, literally 3, 4, 5 minutes. And he said, yep.
Yeah.
And I said, well, do I have any other tests to do? He said, yeah, you could get one of these spec scans. He said, but you know, it cost a couple grand and I don't think you need it. You've got frontal lobe, you know, problems there.
The symptoms are pretty clear.
Yeah, they were. I must have had it all over me. And I did. I know I did. But anyway.
Wow.
So from that point forward. But you know what, Kristen? It didn't mean anything to me. I thought that just meant, oh, that's why I'm so zany. You know, that's why I forget things, you know. Nobody gave me a formula. I don't know that there was a formula. I mean, I read.
What year was this? Do you remember?
I was 52. I'm 74. So 23 years ago.
Okay. So I'm terrible at math, but the year 2000.
Okay. I just thought it meant, oh, that's the reason I'm so crazy and wacky. Now, at this time, I had my own business and I was very successful. I was successful at everything I did, you know, but it was just work. So much. I just felt like a salmon going upstream.
Yeah.
In my whole damn life, going upstream against what everybody else seemed to be able to do easily. And it was, I always said, because I would have been in therapy since I was 30 because of my marriage going downhill. I always said, well, you know, I think therapy is really important. Everybody should do it. I said, you know, I just look at life like there's this, we're always going up, 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 you know, we got this ladder, you know, but if somebody can give us a little boost from behind, you know, we get up the next rung easily enough. And that's kind of the way I just looked at life.
Hmm. So when you were diagnosed, did you choose to be medicated?
No.
No. And so,
let me back up. I was already on meds for depression.
Oh, I see.
But now I look back and I'm getting my meds changed right now. I mean, today, this week, finally found someone, because it's very hard to find psychiatrist to take somebody new. Like I said, been treated for depression since I was 30. Now I look back and I say, so much of that stuff I was bringing me down was my ADHD symptoms, because I wasn't conventional. And I just thought, why aren't I conventional? Why can't I get up in the morning? Why can't I go to bed? Why can't I get stuff done easily? Why aren't I organized? You know, why don't I return phone calls? And it's going to make me money if I do that. And I had nothing motivated me to make me do stuff. I just procrastinated. And I realize other people do those things too, but I kind of took it to a new level.
Yeah. And that's the difference between someone who can obtain a clinical diagnosis and someone who might have some tendencies, but wouldn't be clinically diagnosed is, do you do this to a debilitating degree, right? Is it that debilitating in your life? So like every human struggles sometimes with like, you know, low motivation or poor working memory or trying to, you know, not being able to check things off the list. But is it persistent and is it debilitating? And have you seen it throughout your lifetime?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it from age 3.
Yeah, exactly.
I can look back and see age 3. But anyway, that is exactly it. It was debilitating, but I was being treated for depression. I don't know why nobody educated me. I don't think maybe they didn't. I just didn't know it. Maybe I didn't accept it. Maybe I don't know, but I didn't. And I read about it. I mean, you know, Eamon has all those books and he even started a weight loss group. I was in his initial group and he ran it but I didn't follow through and lose the weight. You know, just no follow through.
Yeah. Okay. So you're diagnosed 23 years ago. So in 2000, you didn't really know much about ADHD and its effect on you. At what point did you start to make changes as far as like seeking treatment, seeking coaching or ADHD specific therapy? Like when did that come into your life?
2 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, no, I've been with a life coach. I've been with a business coach that helped me be successful. Right. I even had a personal assistant once, and she'd clean off my desk or she would go through my papers and go through my mail. She would clean up. She would help me clean out my closet. I mean, I used to tease her about being my paid friend. You know, I had to pay
for sure.
And she was wonderful, but I've always found a way, usually, when I got smarter and older, to skirt around it. Not until I discovered your podcast did I really say, oh my gosh, you mean this is a real thing and people can do something about it, or at least be in a group of people that are like-minded and understand you and don't judge me, because I've always felt judged.
Yeah.
Always judged, because I went through a lot of certifications and things in my life, and I would fail them the first time through, or, you know, if I took them again, I was fine.
Yeah.
But a first time through, and then I eventually did go to college when I was 40, after I retired from my career but I had no goal. I just went to school and I started collecting. I just took things I liked and then I'm interested in everything. So I took a lot of stuff. And then after a while, my husband said, you know, have you ever thought of adding up how many credits you've got? And I'm going, no. And he said, you surely could get your AA by now.
Yeah.
I went to a counselor, and she was fortunately a woman my age. Let's say I was about 43 then. And math was my bugaboo. I could not get, I mean, I finally made it to algebra 2. And then 3 weeks in, we go on vacation for 2 weeks. And I come back and I'm going, no, what's 2 and 2 is what?
You know,
I have no idea. So drop out of that. Anyway, I didn't have the math requirements. And she said, well, you've got so much stuff here. Let's just write your own degree. So she gave me a humanities certification, you know, AA.
I love that. Associates in humanities? Is that what that is?
An associates in AA. You know, in California, junior colleges are a big deal.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
They're very common.
Yeah.
I mean, 25,000 students there. I even worked there, but I loved it. I loved those days. But then I was introduced to the love of my life, Pilates, when in 1992, And then I opened my own studio in 98 and only closed it because we moved back to the Midwest because my husband's health was failing. So, and then unfortunately he died 8 weeks after we got back here. And we got back, he wanted, you know, I found out later, he wanted to move me because, well, you know, we knew he wasn't well. But I'm from this area, and so therefore we had five kids between us, and they all, nobody wanted to raise their families out there. So they all moved east. And if we wanted to see any of our 15 grandchildren through life, we kind of had to move because they couldn't afford, you know, when your kids get to be like your kids' age, you can't afford to just take off because they have activities in summer and you don't want people traveling at holidays. It's so horrible and blah, blah, blah.
So are you surrounded by family now? Is that what you're saying? That you're living close to family?
I have a daughter 2 miles away and a stepson 30 minutes away. So
cool. That's something.
And, you know, I have a sister and a brother here. Great. Although I don't see him a whole lot, but
that's great.
Yeah.
So for you, what would you say was the hardest part? Like when you look back over your life, what were the ADHD symptoms that really were the most debilitating for you?
I would have to say the emotional like regulation, because I just spent, I mean, Kristen, if I had the money that I spent with therapy over the last 40 years, I could buy a new home. I mean,
did you learn to emotionally regulate while you were in therapy?
No. Oh, not then. I mean, I was literally going to a psychiatrist every week. And in those days, $110 wasn't covered by insurance. And all I did was complain about, why can't I get up and get going?
Oh.
Yeah, he put me on lithium. And that then I got lithium poisoning. And he just...
Oh, my word. But in your therapy, like in talk therapy, was emotional...
I had a couple really good cognitive therapists over the years.
Okay.
And one of them used EMDR on me. And that really helped not totally eradicate this trauma that I had, but
helped.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing.
Yeah. I found it to be very helpful as well.
Yeah. And I've dealt with a couple really terrific psychiatrists over the years, but I was being treated for depression. And then I found this somatic therapist and then I hit gold.
Okay. You know? Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. When was that? Recently?
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Okay. And I still meet with her every 2 weeks on the phone.
That's great. So for those that don't know, do you want to share just a little bit about what somatic therapy is like?
Oh, sure. Well, it's all about your body connecting with your mind and your thoughts. For instance, my very first appointment, I walk in and you know how you're so excited, your first appointments. And she said, so how are you feeling? And I said, I'm really excited. You know, it's a real wonderful, hopeful feeling that, you know, you can help me go forward. And she said, let's stop for a second. Where do you feel that? Right. And you're going, well, gosh, it's all right here in my chest, you know, and she's going, let's think about that for a moment. You know, so what she's trying to do is to get you to identify your feelings with what's happening inside you. Mm-hmm. And at the time that I started with her, if you got me too deep into my issues, I fall asleep.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's what I had been doing for years, just checking out. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, taught me to be grounded, and I don't do this anymore, but I did. And
can we talk about that? Because I think that a lot of people are going to identify with, as soon as they start, and I'd like you to share your perspective, but what I've seen in other clients is as soon as they start with something that's really difficult, something that's overwhelming, or something that's like, whether it's physically overwhelming, like there's a lot of tasks, or maybe emotionally overwhelming, literally they start yawning and craving the bed. And if they're in a soft place, they will fall asleep, even just sitting up. Is that what you experience well?
Yeah. I would just close my eyes and just drift off. And there's nothing weirder. One of these therapists, I would open my eyes and she's just staring at me. Weird. But
what not to do if you're a therapist?
This therapist taught me not to go there. Let's go here. Let's feel it.
Where the somatics therapist.
Where is it happening?
Yeah.
and we'd focus on that. And you could literally, I mean, she trained me to literally feel it just exiting, like going down my arms and out my hands. Or, I used to, my pain used to, pain by po I mean, emotional pain used to be in different places in my body, but now it's much higher and more ready to pop out, if I'm there, if I have that. And it's absolutely, gosh darn, it's so great. It's
It's
just,
just
you're still talking, but it's still cognitive, but you are getting to source. What's it doing to you? And you've taught us many times our thoughts are not necessarily our reality. And so we have to see what our thoughts are. I mean, you say that all the time. So all these things, I mean, she was 10 years ago, and I've only gotten stronger and stronger and better and better. And then to discover your life's work, which is what it is, right? And thank goodness we have somebody like you. Gosh darn, it just, I love it so much because I love everything about it.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Hey, Kristen here. I'm the host of this podcast, an ADHD expert and a certified life coach who's helped hundreds of adults with ADHD understand their unique brains and make real changes in their lives. If you're not sure what a life coach is, let me tell you. A life coach is someone who helps you achieve your goals, like a personal trainer for your life. A life coach is a guide who holds your hand along the way as you take baby step after baby step to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish. A good life coach is a trained expert who knows how to look at situations, all situations, with non-judgmental neutrality and offer you solutions that you've probably never even considered before. If you're being treated for your ADHD, and maybe even you've done some work in therapy, and you want to add to your scaffolding of support, you've got to join my group coaching program, Focused. Focused is where functional adults with ADHD surround each other with encouragement and support. And I lead the way with innovative and creative solutions to help you fully accept yourself, understand your ADHD, and create the life that you've always wanted to create, even with ADHD. Go to ihaveadhd.com/focused to join. And I hope to see you in our community today. When did you make the decision to join Focused? How long have you been in our
community?
I listened
to you for maybe 6 months on your public podcast. And then, I'd researched, your Focused group, and I wanted to join. Now I'm widowed and I have limited income. I'm 74. And,
Of
you know,
course.
in the old days, I want to drop that in 2 seconds. But, well, you know what? I did some privileged girl things. I dropped housekeeping once a week, once a month. I don't get my nails done. I do it myself now. And all that adds up. I dropped a couple of subscriptions because this is so important. It has been, I just can't tell you, it's choking me up now to think how important this is. Really, it's just been a savior.
Wow.
Well, it's been, you've given us a path. You've given us a roadmap that, and the roadmap has lots of tangents we can go on if we want. You don't have to just go that way. The tangents sometimes are important to take. I mean, your brain just won't let you go forward. So, okay, I'm going to pull over to this parking lot and catch up emotionally. And then I can go get back on the road. And I've just learned a lot about applying it.
So, how long have you been in the community?
Year and a half.
Year and a half. Amazing. And what was it like for you as someone? We do have people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, but I would say the majority of the group is probably 30s, 40s age range. I mean, we have people who are like 18, 19, 20. So there's a very wide range, but I would say the majority kind of sits in the 30, 40, maybe 50 range. And what was it like for you coming in as someone who might be one of like in a smaller group, age group? I mean, did that feel weird? Did you feel included? Like, what was that like for you?
I wasn't even, it didn't even factor in.
I love it.
I'm just one of the guys.
Yeah, for sure.
I can learn from a 40-year-old's issues every bit as much.
Yeah.
Because what, okay, I may not be in the workforce and they were dealing with a work issue and you know the world's coming down on them or whatever, but I can identify with the way that they're addressing or not addressing probably, and you're helping them address their issues. And that, I don't know, I don't, like I said, I don't really think I'm old, but I am, you know, on the, in any age scale, I am older, but I don't think I'm older. And so I learned from an elderly aunt once, she said, you need to have friends of all ages.
Yes. Yes.
Because otherwise you will get stale.
Love.
So even though these people aren't my friends, they're keeping me a little more aware of what it's like out there in the world. Mm-hmm. And I feel for them. I mean, I've been there perhaps, you know, I mean, I was fired a couple of times, well, 3 or 4 times. You know, I've lived through all those horrible work situations and then the entrepreneurial thing, I've lived through that and lived through the marriage things, the horrible marriage. And then I was fortunate enough at age 33 to meet, you know, like Mr. Ideal. I mean, you know, he loved me to the moon and back and loved me for all my quirks and my wackiness and put up with it, even though he was an extremely linear thinker. I wish, and my, one of my bigger regrets is, dang, I wish I could tell him what I learned. You know, I wish I could share with him what I know now, about why I did this, why I acted that way, why I was always running late.
Yeah.
All the clocks in the house ahead. He used to call that Ellen time. So if I asked him, because we're getting ready to go out and I'm putting my makeup and, you know, and I would yell downstairs to him, I go, what time is it? And he'd go, do you want the real time or Ellen time? You know, even though I had clocks everywhere, I couldn't stop to look, you know, I had to, you know, I just had to keep moving or I get distracted. So I wish I could share with him everything I've learned. He would appreciate it.
He would be enamored with the person that you have evolved into. He really would.
It, you know, to think if he liked me then, just think what he would. Oh, gosh. This is a man that just brought me flowers regularly. I joined a weight loss program once over at the University of California, Irvine. And the meetings were Tuesday nights. I'd come home every single Tuesday night. There was a long stem red rose on the table for me because he just wanted to support me.
Oh,
that's the kind of man he was. You know, we in love and incredibly attracted to each other mentally and emotionally up until then. So it was a major loss.
That's a big loss. I'm going to ask you a really personal question and you do not have to answer it. I'm just going to preface. Do you feel like you were more equipped to process the loss and grief of your husband that you love so dearly?
No. That was my biggest learning experience. When I lost him, I mean, you know, I knew he'd probably die. But no, I went to bed for 1 year and I couldn't get out.
Yeah.
And I was constantly amazed at how I didn't have the capacity to deal with this major loss, even though I knew my whole life I'd almost been prepping for it. I was never afraid to be alone. It was horrible. And, and I can bring that up right now if I have to.
Tell.
It's horrible. And, it's been 8 years this fall. I can't believe it, but you know, I not only lost him, but we'd only lived here in our new house, which we bought online. I mean, for 8 weeks when I lost him. And, but then also just a month and a half before I closed my doors on my business, all those relationships of my community and my clients who, you know, when you've had clients for 17 years, they're very, very intimate relationships. So
yeah,
anyway, it's just lots of things. So
that was a lot of transition and loss at one time.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Retired, moved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bought a new house, lost my husband, wow. And just was totally lost. No friends here.
And then did your somatics therapist help you with that?
Oh, yes.
Beautiful. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can tell you're still like it's still so tender and so raw for
it
you.
It never goes away.
It never goes. I can't imagine.
A loss.
I don't want to. I'm just going to pretend it's like Greg's going to live forever. Just gonna
exactly.
Pretend.
Well, you are young.
Yeah.
I had my good life. I had a charmed life. I had a wonderful life. So
that's so beautiful.
I could never go backwards because absolutely nothing would be similar.
So true. That's so true. How does grief affect your ADHD symptoms now? Do you feel like you've processed it enough where it doesn't affect it? Or on the days where you are feeling deep grief, do you see a correlation between the grief and your symptoms?
Well, I'm actually happy to feel the grief now. I mean, because I know what to do with it.
Yes.
Because I've learned,
yes,
it's the emotional regulation thing. I've learned that it's not the end of the world. I can work with this.
Yep.
I can deal with it. I've got the tools now.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's so beautiful. So tell us about how you treat your ADHD now. So you are 74. You've known you've had ADHD for 23 years. You've been treated for mental health issues, but not, I don't know if you've been treated for ADHD specifically. So tell us about like your treatment for ADHD now and what tools you're using to help you.
I'm having a review of my meds now so that I can get away of just treating the mental health aspect. I want help with the ADHD.
Specifically. So you've been treated for depression still, like even after your ADHD diagnosis, you were still only treated for depression.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. So, I don't like that. I'm sorry.
You know what? It's so disappointing to think nobody zeroed in on that. Nobody.
Like, what's up with that?
Well, I was going to that director and then he left the clinic and I just followed him. But still, just, I don't know. I just remember I said I fall between the cracks. I think that I told such a good story. People think I'm okay.
Say that again. That's important.
That I talk a good story?
Yeah.
People think I'm doing fine.
Yeah. You're very put together. You are very charming. You express yourself really well. You're obviously brilliant. And people think you're fine. And that is not okay. What that is discriminatory. And not intentionally, obviously. Yeah. Nobody would intend, hopefully not. Well, I guess that's remains to be seen. But let's just hope and pray that nobody's intentionally discriminating against you, but you are privileged. You are white. You are intelligent. You are very well put together. I know you're like listening to this conversation, not looking at it, but she's beautiful. And so when you walk into a doctor's office and you're able to express yourself, I can see how you would fall between the cracks because nobody is pinpointing you as like, oh, this woman is a hot mess. We need to get her help. It's like, this woman is well put together. She's able to express herself. She's fine.
And I'm highly functioning.
Yeah.
But that's where I think I learned that word masking from being in focused. Yeah. And that's exactly what that is, right? I'm doing fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So masking, here's the thing with masking. I think we all do it. It's a learned behavior. We do it out of self-preservation. Like if I don't mask, then they're going to know the truth.
Yes.
But there is a level of vulnerability that we do need to reveal to people in order to get the help we need. Right?
Well, yeah, but I obviously never used that. I mean, I was vulnerable, but it never evidently got me to the correct result.
And I don't want to imply that that is on you. I don't think it is.
I think I can make myself very vulnerable. And in fact, I'll be quite honest, because I wasn't educated, I didn't go to college and get a formal education and stuff. I used my personality to get what I wanted. And so you learn to, I hate to use the word manipulate, but I would say that, you know, I'd make myself vulnerable and that would win someone over, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's totally manipulation, but I don't realize I'm doing it. And shame on me. I don't do it anymore. But I mean, that's just, I had to do something to get what I needed.
I resonate with that very deeply.
And I make
think,
a living, you know,
for sure.
Get through a nasty marriage with a nasty woman.
Or to grow up in a family of 11 children.
Yeah, right. And you know, that you just, and we, whoops, excuse me.
You're good.
That was my lunch alarm.
Don't forget to eat.
That's what it says. Don't forget to eat. I have alarms for everything.
It's good.
As you can see, I'm all over the place always.
No, I love it.
There's so much stuff to talk about, isn't there? There's so, life is so fascinating.
And human connection is just such a huge dopamine hit, isn't it? Just like sitting face to face with you. I just feel so full.
Well,
and I just feel so lucky to be able to connect because, you know, we're in different parts of the country, we're different ages, and yet there's so much to connect on because of the shared experience of just being human and then being a human with ADHD.
And that's why the community inside Focused is important.
Mm.
Because it brings us all together over this central issue. And it doesn't matter what you do for a living, how you were raised, what color you are, what gender, nothing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. None of it. I love that.
Oh, I love it too. How have you used the Focus program? Like, what does that look like for you? What have you found to be helpful?
Well, when I joined, I remember one of the first calls I heard, the guy said, I've gotten so much out of it and I haven't even done a workbook and I've been here over a year. And I thought, sheesh, that's crazy. I want to do everything. Well, I get into it. And of course I don't do workbooks.
Of course.
But I love them. I look at them, but sitting down and doing them just takes so much from me.
Yeah.
But I get so much from the podcasts, but the coaching calls, I mean, the podcast I think of as more of a learning experience.
Sure.
You're teaching, educating, perhaps,
sure.
And the coaching calls during the week for the members. Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And you have incredible speakers or hosts, you know,
guest speakers, guest teachers. Yeah.
Yeah. They're all just, you know, you vet your people really well, I guess. You just, you know,
we try. Yeah.
You're smart.
Hey, thanks. What wisdom do you have to share with other? I know you don't identify as being older. And so I'm sorry that I keep bringing it up.
That's
because
okay.
Because I That's really right. want to highlight.
Because I think that if you're my age or you're 80 or 90 and you're still in touch with yourself, all this still matters. Why would it stop mattering just because I get older? It doesn't.
Like applause. All the applause. Yes. What a privilege to know you have ADHD at the age of 74 years old or 84 or 94. Mm-hmm. Our mothers, grandmothers, great grandmothers, they did not have that privilege. They did not have a diagnosis to point to say, this explains so much of why I act the way I do.
The validation I felt after I first found you, I've got goosebumps right now. It was just, there's not a whole lot of people that understand that I'm so excited over this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I adore my sister, but she's from a different generation.
Yeah.
You just keep toughing it through. You just keep toughing it through. And she's far more active than me. 88, still plays golf twice a week. You know, on her HO, I mean, everything. So busy. Her husband, 2 years older than her, still works. He mows the lawn at the golf course. I mean, such examples. But anyway, but she doesn't have this level of awareness at all.
Yeah. I think that it's a really interesting divide between older adults who dabble in self-development, coaching, therapy, whatever the case may be, and then older adults who are like, either think that it's hogwash, whatever that means, or like, I'm too, like, what's the point? I'm too old. There's no point. And, you know, I am who I am. I'm not going to change, like that kind of thing. And I just love your example of like, it's never too late to make some changes. It's never too late to feel better. It's never too late to be connected to yourself and who you are and what you want out of life. It's never too late. Like, why are we, why is there this like line and whatever? It's subjective, right? So for some people, it's like after 50, I'm not going to do anything. And so for some people, it's later or earlier. But I just want to make a case for neuroplasticity and our brain's willingness, desire to change. The brain will change from the cradle to the grave that long. Like you can, your brain will change and adapt. So if you want to learn how to regulate your emotions, it's not too late. If you want to know and learn how to treat your ADHD, it's not too late. It's never too late.
I am just really on board with that. Some people just don't quite get the deep dive. But then I find I have to kind of explain why I'm doing a deep dive in this. Like this is one of the more important things in my day or my life, being part of this community. And in fact, my daughter just said, I just don't want you using your ADHD as an excuse. Oh boy, can you imagine what my response was?
Ellen.
But I said it so intelligently. I responded so, so intelligently to her. And I just said, until you've been in my shoes, you don't know how tough life was. Feeling stupid, feeling dumb, not being able to read or feel smart at math. I mean, I wasn't at all. You know, how I had to pretend and, you know, use my personality, as I said, because I didn't have any criteria, any physical, you know, like a degree or, you know, whatever. And woo, shut her down. Now, good. The reason that was kind of shocking is because she has a child that has ADHD and is treated for it, but not treated like I'm being treated.
Yeah.
Not learning what I'm learning. So sometimes I send him little TikToks or something. I'm the grandma. I've got 15 grandkids and they all know, oh my God, here comes another one. But that's all right. I don't care.
I mean, grandma of the year. That's what I think. Sometimes, did you all hear that? Sometimes I send them little TikToks. I mean, that's amazing because what you're doing is helping to educate now in a way that's like maybe goes beyond what he has been exposed to. I love it.
He's a sophomore in college now and he is hardworking and smart and all that, but he's on medication and I, the first time I ever saw that it, on the days he doesn't take this medication, like a Sunday or something, woo, what a different person.
Yeah.
I just think to myself, and yeah, it's true. Not everybody is coming from where I'm coming from, my daughter tells me. So I have to look at that. I don't want to be too obnoxious, but you know, maybe he gets frustrated and doesn't know what to do with it, like young people do.
Yeah.
And maybe this is giving him a little tool or a hope or...
Yeah.
I mean,
wow.
You know,
what a role reversal, because it's usually the parent saying to the child, I don't want you to use this as an excuse. And in your case, it's the child saying to the parent, I don't want you to use this as an excuse.
Something that older people do experience. Their kids are older now and they look at you as you're older. You're so much older. And you probably need help because you know what? You're older. You know, where I'm really capable of taking care of myself.
For sure.
Every once in a while, I really do need assistance from my kids. But
yeah,
I learned something in a podcast. I think it might have been a guest podcast. And she was outlining friendships or whatever. And like there's a tier one, tier two, tier three.
Yes.
You know, who do you put in tier one? And of course, I put my children in there and boo, 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 boo. And somebody said something about it. She said, okay, everybody take their children out and put them over here in this box.
Yeah.
and that your children don't need you to be a friend.
Yeah.
And they need you to be their parent.
Yeah.
And you were their parent until the day they die. And it helped me so much because with five kids and five of spouses, there's five spouses. I love them all. They're fabulous humans. And I just love them all.
Awesome.
They're all on different paths. And it let me step back and not be involved because, you know, I never had any trouble with my kids when I was raising them, not teenagers, mm-hmm. all that. But when your kids get in their 30s, their problems are real.
Oh,
their problems are serious.
Yeah.
And, you know, you know what I'm talking about. You're a young married and
yeah, my problems are real and they are serious, Ellen. Yeah, let me tell you.
I know. So it's so easy to want to coddle or give advice. And I know now my mother and father had this mastered. Now, I interpreted that all this time until that phone call that my mother didn't care. That, you know, she never got involved, you know, in my life. And, you know, she never gave me advice. And, you know, and once I left the house.
Yeah.
But now I know that she had to do that for her own self-preservation, but also it was the right thing to do to make me stand on my own.
That's beautiful. I think that transition is so tricky and we don't talk about it enough. The transition of like your kids are adults and now what is the relationship like? Are we friends? Are we like, what's going on here? And I think that's a really interesting perspective. And I love the idea of taking your kids out of tier one. And for those of you who are not sure, like tier one is your closest relationships, but they are mutual relationships, as in like partners, husband and wife.
You said once your best girlfriend who you know you can call in the middle of the night.
Yes. But there's mutuality, there's reciprocity in a way that there's not with children, right? Like a parent-child relationship is not a mutual relationship. The energy flows one way. It's a one-way street. And so we take the kids out of tier one because they go in a separate box. They're your kids. You're there to serve, love, protect for the rest of their life. That's it. That's what it is. I love it.
They still need that in their 50s. I've got five kids in their 50s plus their spouses. And they still need me to be the parent. So
Yeah. And I am prepping myself for that, where it's like you don't just end it when you're when they're 18 or 20 or whatever. It's like, no, I will be loving, serving, protecting them for the rest of their lives.
And
not expecting mutuality in return, just love.
And you know what? That point of expecting mutuality is really important, because if you enjoy your child, you enjoy their company, they enjoy you, you know, like buddies, friends or whatever, but you have to remember you're not.
Yes, there's, of course, residual benefits that come with the parent-child relationship, where, of course, I get a huge dopamine hit when my son wants to come to me, talk to me, spend time with me. Gigantic dopamine hit. But I always have to remind myself that I am there for him. He's not here for me. Right. And do I get the residual benefits of that? 100%. And so my heart is full of love and my brain is full of dopamine and it is the best. But I always have to remember I'm there for him. He doesn't have to be here for me.
I wish that I had known all this at your age.
Oh,
gosh darn.
I mean, I wish that I had known it. My sister has littler kids. Her oldest is 7. And I always say to her, I wish I knew what you know now, you know, when my kids were as little. I think we all just feel like that as moms, like, oh, I wish I could be perfect for my kid because I love my kids so much.
Yeah. And you know what? The more I know about myself, the more confident I am.
Yeah.
And I'm more authentic. Authentic, I feel with myself. I don't put up with stuff from other people judging me anymore. And I don't know if that's an age thing, because it does come with age, but I'd like to think it comes from knowing myself.
Yeah.
And then I just don't put up with people like that anymore. No, not necessary. Or I just, if I love them, I'll just say, you really mean that?
Yeah.
You know, my circle's gotten smaller. It's gotten narrower because I'm only got people in it that I really love.
How does that feel?
It's pretty darn good feeling. Because, you know, they say if you die with five good friends, you're very fortunate. And, you know, I've got that covered.
So. That's beautiful.
But thank you, Focused.
Just, this is a beautiful way to wrap it up. And I want to express my appreciation. This time is such a meaningful conversation for me, because to be able to have an extended convo with a client that I've been able to support for a year and a half. And I do feel like I already know you. I've coached you. It's been so fun to just spend this long time with you. So thanks for sharing your story on the podcast here. And I know that it's going to resonate with a lot of people, those who identify as older adults who needed some inspiration. So I do believe you are an inspiration. And those who are just feeling like stuck in emotional regulation, or really wondering, like, what does it look like when I'm 70, in my 70s? Like, am I still going to be happy? Am I still going to be wanting to do the work? And I think you give us a roadmap for that. So I'm just really appreciative to you for that, Ellen.
Makes me feel so useful.
You are useful. Dopamine, all the dopamine for you today. Thanks.
Hey, ADHDer, I see you. I know exactly what it's like to feel lost, confused, frustrated, and like no one out there really understands the way that your brain works. That's why I created Focused. Focused is my monthly coaching program where I lead you through a step-by-step process of understanding yourself, feeling better, and creating the life that you know you're meant for. You'll study, be coached, grow, and make amazing changes alongside of other educated professional adults with ADHD from all over the world. Visit ihaveadhd.com/focused to learn more.